Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Amy Gilbrow. I represent the plaintiff appellant Jeffrey Greenway. Since 1988, Mr. Greenway has been receiving Social Security Supplemental Security Income benefits because he's disabled based on schizophrenia. The issue before the administrative law judge and the case that's considered by the court is a determination of whether he was disabled on or before June 30th, 1982.
Counsel, let me tell you what's on my mind in this case. It looked to me as though it could go either way. Usually schizophrenia sets in between ages 18 and 25. He's got a schizophrenic brother. It's sad. Genetic. So pretty good case that if he's diagnosed now, he had it then. On the other hand, the ALJ made considerable efforts to get all the records, and what records he got showed medical exams at the relevant time, and they all said he wasn't schizophrenic. Maybe some antisocial personality there, but not schizophrenic. They specifically looked for it. So it seems like there's a fair effort to get the records and substantial evidence on the record as a whole that he wasn't schizophrenic then, even though those of us who think, well, it sets in between 18 and 25 would think that he was. Why don't we have to defer to the Social Security Administration because of the administrative law standard of review?
I disagree with you on one point.
Explain it.
Which is that I don't think that the ALJ made considerable efforts to get records in this case. He did say in his decision that the record had been reconstructed as well as possible. But other than that statement, there's no evidence of what he did. What records did the administrative law judge request in this case? What did he do to develop this record?
I thought he asked for all records from everybody that he was given knowledge that there might be records.
There's no evidence in the record of any request. Those requests would have been made in writing by the judge. There's also an indication that, especially in regard to the records from Western State, which the judge recognized were sparse and incomplete, he did not request any additional records from Western State. He and Mr. Greenway had discussions about the Western State Hospital records at both hearings in this case. And recall that Mr. Greenway is an unrepresented, acknowledgedly mentally ill
individual. How did the ALJ get the records that he got?
I don't know.
What inference could possibly be drawn other than that he asked for them and that they came?
Well, Mr. Greenway also took those records to the second hearing. They had a discussion about them. The judge said he already had those records. An inference could be drawn that Mr. Greenway provided those records, that the ALJ didn't request them.
Did Greenway say he did?
Did Greenway say he had submitted the records previously? No, but he did take identical records to the hearing with him the second time.
Well, if the ALJ said he was going to get them, and he says he has them, why are we supposed to draw an inference that he didn't try to get them?
Well, because
I don't understand that line of thinking.
Because of what, because of the discussion he and Mr. Greenway had at the second hearing, on January 9, 2006, after the judge had already written a letter to the Appeals Council, and I'm referring to exhibit to page 47 of the excerpts of record, after the ALJ had already sent a letter to the Appeals Council saying, "I'm going to request these records," Mr. Greenway said, "What about trying to obtain records from Western State directly? Do you think they might still have any records of mine?" And the ALJ responded, "I can do that, or you can do that." The ALJ's response
Wait a minute, I'm looking at 47 and I don't see it.
ER 47? Oh, I'm so sorry. I probably have the transcript site.
I assume I should look at the... Oh, wait. Your bait stamps may be at the top here.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I had that. Anyway, I will get it for you. But there was this discussion. The ALJ indicated I can do that or you can do that, indicating that he had not requested the records at that point. The decision was issued on February 29th, I believe 2006. So the ALJ only had 6 weeks after the decision if he did request those records. These records...
Are you suggesting there are records?
Yes.
You know there are records that were not obtained, is that correct?
Yes. Okay. And the ALJ acknowledged these records were sparse and incomplete. All we have for a period of 3 years at Western State, approximately, is a discharge summary and an...
Have you gotten the records since and moved to supplement in some way to get them in?
No, I have not moved to supplement. However, I have requested the records.
And do you know if there are any?
Or you have them?
Pardon?
You said you requested records.
I did.
And?
You have them.
I have them, yes.
So there are more records?
Yes. But the issue is whether the issue before this court, because...
I think there's some procedure, as I remember from when I was a district judge, for expanding the record in the district court if there's some good reason to. I can't remember exactly what it was anymore.
I didn't request the records at the district court. I requested them several months ago. There's no procedure for submitting records at the Ninth Circuit. I felt that the rule for submitting new records is that the court can only consider those records if there's good cause for not submitting them earlier. And in this case, because I hadn't requested those records at the district court, I did not feel that I would win on a good cause argument.
Well, the point is, of course, you're supposed to submit things at the district court. We're an appellate court.
Right. That's exactly right.
Well, then why aren't we just stuck with a record? There are no other records. The record doesn't show any other records.
Because the issue that I brought before the district court and before this court is whether the administrative law judge had a duty to request those records for a client who is unrepresented at the hearing level. The ALJ did not request those records.
Sounds like he did as well as a good lawyer would.
He didn't request the records.
We don't know that. You say he did. He said he would.
He indicated at the hearing that...
He said you can get them or I can get them.
That's right. So at the hearing...
But we don't know that he did not request them, do we?
No, but at the hearing in January 2006, the ALJ and the plaintiff had this discussion, and in February he issued a decision. There's no indication in the record that there was any written request for those records. There are lots of things in this record.
I can't believe it. You know, we're sitting on this case, and maybe these records, which you now have, showed that the man was diagnosed with schizophrenia at the relevant dates, and maybe they don't, and you have them, and we don't, and the district court didn't, and they could have been obtained in district court when he was represented. It seems like the whole thing's kind of artificial, and I don't know if he didn't ask. It's not incumbent upon the Social Security Administration to put on proof that they conducted themselves according to law.
I disagree. I think that there is a requirement for them to show that the ALJ, to
show
he conducted himself.
So when they talk,
properly.
We should assume they're lying unless they put on proof by documentary evidence?
Well, the ALJ is supposed to support his decision by substantial evidence. Isn't he required to support, rather than just a bare statement in his decision, isn't he required to explain what he did?
So we should call him a liar unless he can prove it?
There's no evidence in the record that he requested these records.
Did he say he did?
He did.
Well, so do we have to call him a liar? Because the fact that he said he did, that's evidence that he did. And I think you're saying we have to call him a liar unless he can prove that what he said was true by showing a document.
I think that's right. The other issue that
is
I'd ask...
Is there any procedure where you can reopen the case below and get the records in?
No, that time has passed. The reopening period for the administrative law judge's decision, I haven't considered that particular avenue. The decision was February of 2006. It's now February. It's now 2009. It's only been 3 years. I could request reopening of the record. The other aspect of the court I'd like to aspect of this case I'd like the court to consider is that the ALJ did not properly call a medical expert in the case. It's clear that he didn't do that. It's clear that there's a finding of disability. I have used my time, and thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. David Johnson representing Commissioner Astru and the Social Security Administration. The record was developed as much as possible, and inferences that more could have been done, inferences that there were diagnoses are insufficient to carry plaintiff's or Mr. Greenway's burden of proving that he had a medically determinable impairment.
There's a rule that when somebody is diagnosed later, the ALJ should ordinarily call a medical expert and ask him if that diagnosis explains symptoms that existed earlier. I can't remember the exact formulation of the rule and what the exceptions are. You need to explain what exception applies here.
Certainly. Social Security ruling 8320 addresses that in some detail, but it doesn't all explain exactly when onset needs to be inferred. When onset needs to be inferred, generally a medical expert needs to be consulted. That is onset of disability, not onset of the situation. Now, in this case, Mr. Greenway was found disabled as of 1988, I believe it was, after his date last insured, and he was found for supplemental security income, which does not have an insurance requirement. So after that, Dr. Murray, a state agency reviewing physician, looked at the record in 1997, and the ALJ, of course, looked at the record for his decision. He did not need to consult a medical expert because there was no medical basis that a medical expert could have used to infer that onset occurred while Mr. Greenway was insured. And the ruling is clear that you can't draw an inference of the onset of disability without a medical basis.
And what do you mean medical basis?
I mean diagnosis at the time or some way to extrapolate that he really had the would have been diagnosed if he'd been seen. He was seen. We need signs.
There is some basis. He has schizophrenia later, and usually it sets in between ages 18 and 25.
Well, that's not in evidence, but what is in evidence is that he had schizophrenia later. And there could be...
You said that's not in evidence. What was the antecedent for that?
I'm sorry, your statement, Your Honor, that it usually sets in at those ages you stated, I do not believe is in evidence.
No, it isn't. It's just anybody who reads about schizophrenia knows it.
But I don't think this court can exclude the later onset. And the ALJ noted some facts that would indicate that it hadn't come on yet, including that he was working at substantial gainful activity right up until the day of his crime, and that he received no treatment after being recaptured, and he received no treatment after his incarceration ended, either on his own from a community source or while incarcerated after being recaptured.
And he received none while he was on the run, he said.
That's correct. And he was able to be on the run for several years. He was able to engineer a successful escape, able to be on the run for several years, and receive no treatment. He didn't run afoul of authorities.
Because we don't have a special medical program for fugitives on the lam?
Well, we might, and it might be called you run afoul of the authorities because your behavior causes you to act in ways that get you committed or get you arrested or something like that. So the medical evidence at the time of his incident was that he had behaved in a way that's socially unacceptable. He'd committed a rape, and that's how the diagnostic impression of Dr. Kim was sexual deviation rape. That describes the behavior. Doesn't attribute to schizophrenia.
Is there relevance to how we have to decide this, that the doctors at the time thought he was not schizophrenic, that he was lying about his symptoms, and that he might have antisocial personality?
Yes, Your Honor. That's relevant in that it further detracts from the medical evidence, the laboratory findings, the signs that are required to diagnose the disease. So a medical expert couldn't infer what the treater, Dr. Kim, and the examiners, Dr. Wing, and reviewer, Dr. Vitals, did not find at the time of the treatment. So the fact that he displayed psychotic behavior on the ward in what was described as an acute episode, and then testing occurred, and that testing didn't show the psychotic behavior or symptoms.
But what do you do with the testing's in 78, Kim's reports in 78, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Wing's reports in 79. He escapes in 80. His insurance runs out in 82, in June of 82. Could he have had an onset between June of 80 and June of 82?
It's possible. It's his burden to prove that he did. And there's no evidence to indicate that he did. Now, Mr. Greenway's counsel is correct that in their brief that the ALJ cannot sit idly by and say, you haven't proven your case, you lose. The ALJ needs to assist, the commissioner needs to assist all they can in developing the record, and they did. The regulation requires the commissioner to seek the records. The only treatment provider was Western State Hospital, and that produced the records that the ALJ had in front of him. Then the ALJ stated at the September hearing that he would request additional records, or make additional requests, I should say. In the November letter to the Appeals Council, he told them that he was in the process of doing so. And in January at the hearing, he stated that both what counsel said and that he thought further efforts would be fruitless, but he gave the Mr. Greenway self-addressed stamped envelope and said, get me whatever you can, essentially. And then, instead of issuing a final decision of the commissioner right then, he asked the Appeals Council to look at his recommended decision, look at the case, and make their own decision. This is an unusual proceeding for disability cases. Usually the ALJ issues a decision, and the appeals, if asked to review the decision, the Appeals Council reviews it. In this case, the ALJ put together all he had, wrote a decision, and recommended that the Appeals Council adopted it.
Could you list what the ALJ did and tell us how to find it in the excerpts to get the records?
Your Honor, that's on pages, I can. That is on pages 35 to 36 of my brief. I've summarized it that at the September 2005 hearing, and this is at ER 87, he asked Mr. Greenway about additional places. Maybe if he'd sought treatment somewhere else, maybe if he'd been treated involuntarily somewhere else. He offered to seek records from those additional places. Mr. Greenway did not know of any names, and later testified that he had no mental health treatment until 1995, years after his recapture, years after his being found disabled, after release from incarceration. The ALJ stated he would attempt to obtain records from the Washington State Department of Corrections, the Shelton Correctional Facility, which is different than Western State Hospital, even though Mr. Greenway stated he had not been treated there. And he promised he would do what he can to obtain information, and that was all at the September hearing. In November, he wrote the letter to the Appeals Council saying that he was currently attempting to obtain intervening medical records, and those efforts were not fruitful, and he suggested to Mr. Greenway at the January 2006 hearing that it was fruitless. He'd done what he could. If you can get me something more, Mr. Greenway, please do so. I'm paraphrasing here. And waited. Nothing came. Did what he had to do and issued a recommended decision that Mr. Greenway still didn't produce evidence to the Appeals Council, and I'd like to bring the Court's attention to Allen v. Secretary of Health and Human Services, 726-1470 at 1473, and I apologize that it's not in my brief, but it puts the responsibility on when a claimant's unrepresented before an ALJ, an attorney at district court should have cured the record issue. If
This is not in your brief, why don't you give us a 28-J letter?
I will.
You can use one of those gummy slips that the clerk has.
Thank you.
I vaguely recall that there's a reg that says the ALJ has a duty to help get the records, and his duty is discharged by asking twice.
That's the reg that says the commissioner will make every reasonable effort when you file a claim, and we will ask twice, and that's what every reasonable effort means. And then the ALJ's duty is defined in case
law.
That is
the reg.
That's the reg on the commissioner.
Did the commissioner ask twice?
Yes, Your Honor. Unfortunately, the requests are placed in what is Section C of the file. If you look at the file, you'll notice exhibits are labeled A, B, C, D, E, and F. There are no C exhibits. They're never included in the excerpt of records that's produced for court proceedings. And, in fact, it's my understanding that once the excerpt or the transcript of records is produced, the C documents are destroyed. I have to tell you that they did because, one, that's our procedure. Two, the records are there, and they didn't come from any other place. Three, the ALJ made additional requests. They're presumed to act with integrity, and those requests did not produce anything not already in the record. So both the commissioner and the ALJ fulfilled their duties.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Greenway v. Astru was submitted.